Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
First things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That right there is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter.
I guarantee you, if you guys hang in with us and you're number three, at 6:30, Jenna's going to realize her show is getting ready to start.
I know. I
you
threw
put
my
something sc- up under. What'd you do? What'd you throw up under? What'd you
I
do?
Had
she
a scarf
has a shawl
on my lap
because
it's a little cold in here, and I didn't know what to do, so I threw it, not realizing that's still on camera.
That has to do with us chatting right as we go on the air?
I thought that's what the question was.
Okay. Yeah. No
this
problem.
Right
Good
here
morning.
Is Nick Wright.
And I promised Nick Wright today I'm coming in love.
Yeah.
I love my guy and everything. I promise. I'm not going to do this today.
Tell me.
I'm not going to talk about his glorious hair.
Okay.
I'm not going to reveal to the public that he actually is married to one of my sisters. I'm not going to do that. We're going to have a great show, Jenna.
Right
you
here?
And I. We're doing this, okay?
Both of those were lies. The hair, much to Freddie's chagrin,
shockingly,
is not glorious.
We did not mention,
and I'm not married to your sister, but
we
go
did
ahead,
not
Jenna.
Mention your height this morning, so yeah. We will lay off all
kids,
the
kids, drink your
falsehoods.
Milk and stuff. If not, you grow up to be 5'7", like Nick Wright.
Well, we are 3 minutes into a three-hour show, and we've discussed nothing but non-sports. Uh-huh. So let's get back on track. Big changes coming from the NFC champs. Klay Thompson might miss Game 3, the finals, but we got to start with Kawhi Leonard. According to reports, the Raptors all-everything superstar is being slowed down by a knee issue, which stems from him overcompensating for a quad injury. The same right quad injury that forced him to miss all but 9 games last year in San Antonio. This Raptors team begins and ends with Kawhi. So, CC, even though he isn't 100% healthy, does Toronto need even more from Kawhi moving forward?
Well, this is the thing. With Kawhi right now, where he is as far as a health standpoint, every Golden State, all their superstars, like they would like to get more from him. For Toronto to be able to win, I'm not going to say they have to get more from Kawhi. They have to get a different version of what Kawhi can do, because I don't believe with the number of games they're going to play, the type of people they're going to send at him, he's not going to be any healthier than he was in Game 2. I thought winning, closing out the series with Milwaukee was going to give him a couple extra days of rest, that he might have a chance to be a little bit fresher. But you reported it is the quad that he hurt in San Antonio, but it's not the same injury. People be like, okay, if Tiger Woods, if he said, oh, my back's hurting, everyone's going to go, oh, man, that's the one he had surgery on. But it could be, his back's huge. He could be in different areas. So the quad injury, yes, it's the same quad that he had problems with, but it's not the same injury. And most of that injury comes from him getting what a lot of players get in the NBA, tendonitis, and he got that in his left knee. And after the tendonitis and starting to compensate, Jenna, you know, as much as you work out, you're trying to work out the day, your body's supposed to rest, but you've been working out too hard the last several days. Kawhi's body don't have time to rest, and because he's overcompensating, then now the right quad has flared up. But the last two series, forget about the finals. Oh, he's going against Ben Simmons, Ben, who Nick, since he's coming to the league, has talked about he's an elite defender.
Yep.
He's got elite height, weight,
length.
Speed.
Yep.
Man, like, he's a tremendous defender. Faced him in a playoff 7 games. And then you face the MVP of the league and Giannis in another very, very tough series. So I don't expect Kawhi to get better from a health standpoint, but from a basketball, I expect him to face the double team better. I wish he'd be far more aggressive in attacking the double team every once in a while, splitting the double team and trying to score compared to backing away from the double team and letting them converge on him and that leading to turnovers or lack of offense. When he's 35 feet away from the bucket, He's not effective, as we've seen him in the first three series that we saw him in. So, yeah, be more aggressive against the double team. Don't turn the ball over. And if you can't, worst case scenario, make plays for your teammates. So I don't think he'll be better. Just be more effective, more efficient in what he's doing.
And it's very hard this time of year, even if you had 22 games due to load management during the season, you're not going to get any games off during the playoffs. He's already played 20 playoff games. It's hard to be fully healthy at the end of the season. And to Kawhi's credit, he has not brought up injury or anything at all. I think this report comes from someone around him trying to help him out, similar to what happened with Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard wasn't playing up to the standard that he wanted to. He didn't say a word. Then all of a sudden, I would imagine someone close to him reveals, listen, guys, he's got a cracked rib. Remember when he got fallen on? He's got a cracked rib. So somebody that cares about Kawhi is saying, guys, he's dealing with a real... I don't know if it's you want to call it an injury or something that is limiting him due to what his body can do.
He's not as athletic. He's not as explosive.
Right.
He can't get out on the break. He's not the same player, even if the numbers, shooting percentage, is going to be a little down. But it's down for everyone.
And that's for Kawhi. That in the second round against Philly and Ben Simmons, he averaged 35, 10, and 4 on 53% from the field. In the next round against Giannis in Milwaukee, he averaged 30, 10, and 4 on 44% from the field. And through two games of the NBA Finals, he's averaging 29, 11, and 4 on 38% from the field. The shooting percentage is the only part of the stat line that if that 38 was 48%, we'd say Kawhi's been the best player in this series, hands down. It's the Warriors have been limiting him as far as his efficiency and limiting his attempts because he's been getting to the free throw line a bunch, but he's only made 13 field goals in this series. And the other thing for Kawhi, and this does make me wonder if about the lower body ailment, is the first half of these playoffs, the part of his game that was remarkable was through the first half of the playoffs, he was shooting 50% from three. Over the last 11 games, he's shooting 28% from three. And that's been a big part of his efficiency numbers taking a big haircut is he was shooting way over his skis from three-point range, and now he's shooting below his averages from three-point range.
So if you're the Warriors, how do you take advantage of that? How were you guarding him before, and now knowing that he does have an ailment or something he's dealing with, how do you approach guarding him now?
Oh, they're going to take the ball out of his hand. They're going to make the other players beat him. They're going to say at 1-1, we'll take what Kawhi has done. But in the finals, like I haven't seen in the last finals, even with LeBron, most of the great players, it's hard to shoot above 50%. That's the first thing I look at when I start looking at the stat sheet.
For sure.
Who on the team shot above 50%? And when you go down, both teams, forget Toronto, all of them, man, it's hard to shoot. They have a better game plan in the playoffs. They get into you. There's more physical contact. And Kawhi is a pure jump shooter. He jumps off two legs on every single jump shot. He never shoots. And that's why you see from deep, it's affected more. That's why you see the percentage, 38% in this field goal percentage. It's affected more. And Golden State's done the best job as far as defending him, concentrating on him, understand what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do, and forcing him into things that could cause turnover.
And here's the concern for Toronto, as we've talked about this year after year in the NBA playoffs, is who gets worse on the road? Not your stars, but your role players.
The role players.
And now Golden State, they have no reason to change how they're guarding Kawhi. Even though he's averaging 29 a game, because it hasn't been a super efficient 29, they'll take that. If they can keep Kawhi around 30, especially in games at Oracle, and say, okay, Danny Green, Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, who's playing like a role player, those guys are going to have to beat us. I would not imagine Golden State's going to change some of their offensive game plan, particularly if Klay can't go or if he's extremely limited. Defensively, I don't think they'll change how they're guarding Kawhi one bit, and I think they'll rely on those role players not being as good in Oracle as they were in Jurassic
Park. One reason why the Raptors are able to advance to the finals, because Nick Nurse made great adjustments, especially in round two and then the conference final there against Milwaukee. So especially after game two, we saw them change offensively. They put Kawhi on Giannis. That's when the series turned around. Let's just see game number three. Nick Nurse, inexperienced as a coach. He has been in, him and Steve Kerr going back and forth. Let's see what adjustment he makes when they go to Oracle, which he's done last couple seasons.
And that change that Nick Nurse was referring to was just being more physical against the Bucks
yes.
And then moving on and seeing if they can do that against the Warriors as well. All right, we're going to talk about football on the other side. Moving on. Rams running back Todd Gurley was supposed to be the focal point in the Super Bowl last year, but carried the ball just 10 times, 35 yards, reportedly hampered by a bad knee. The team hasn't said much since then, although they did draft a running back in this year's draft. According to reports, Gurley won't be the bell cow back for the Rams moving forward. Those days are seemingly over. Sean McVay talked about Gurley's desire to play at a lower weight this season.
I want him to feel most comfortable, and that's the most important thing. What he feels like he can function at, be the all-purpose back that he's been, and that's where we're at. So if he says, I'd rather play 5-10 pounds lighter, and he's going to feel better about that, then that's exactly that what we'll do, and I think he's earned the right to be able to tell us how he's feeling, you know, with a give and take, and as long as he's got a why, which I know he does, then, you know, we're always receptive to those things.
See, a lot of us went into the Super Bowl last year and came out of the Super Bowl, rather, not really fully understanding why Todd Gurley was so ineffective. Now we have some semblance of an idea. Mm-hmm. It is that knee that's been bothering him. What are fair expectations for Gurley this coming season now?
Well, this is the thing. This is what you know. When he misses the type of time that he missed late in the season, when they are playing for what they were playing for, you knew something was wrong with his knee. And it all started week number one, where he had an odd landing on the sideline. And people say, wow, week number one, 4 months later? Yes, the wear and tear on your body, ultimately it got the best of him. And you could see from a game planning standpoint, that would be like him in the Super Bowl is like Steph Curry, we're going to play him, he's only going to get 5 shots. Well, what the heck's wrong with Steph Curry? There would have to be something wrong. And that's what Nick was emphatic about the Super Bowl. There's something wrong with Todd Gurley. We need an answer. Yeah, he's got a chronic knee. He might have an arthritic knee. But I don't like the fact that now the coach is talking about, oh, we're going to reduce his workload, but we just made him the highest paid.
It's a big problem.
Because what you do upstairs has to match what they do downstairs.
But if he can't, he can't.
You made a bad decision. And for me, this is really going to test not Ty Gurley, not Jared Goff. This is going to test Sean McVay. Because last season, I know people call you a genius. Well, a genius, he wouldn't have an offense that the tight end would be one of the least notable receivers. In the NFL, there were only 7 teams that threw to the tight end less than what the Rams did. So now they need some versatility. And I'm going to put that at Sean McVay. Because if Todd Gurley's out there, they could have utilized him better as a decoy. Why would Todd Gurley's absence hurt him? This offense is a speed offense. They're trying to run the ball, and then some type of deception to hit you with the big pass. So Todd Gurley's injury, Cooper Kupp at the slot position because they don't have a tight end, so then you could clamp down on the receivers outside. I love the receiving group, but they need some variety. They have to get the tight end involved, and if Todd Gurley's on the field, you have to be able to utilize him in play action as a decoy because the league still respects Todd Gurley if he's on the field.
Now, one of the things I love about sports is you can lie through your words all you want, but you're not going to be able to lie through your actions. And the Rams' actions as far as how they used Todd Gurley and then what they did in the draft screamed from the hilltops, there is a problem here. The guy that could have won league MVP a couple of times, guy who was one of the most dynamic weapons in the entire league, arguably on a team with Aaron Donald, you could have said was the best player on the team. They stopped using him like that. I mean, going back to week 14, 11 carries for 28 yards. Mm-hmm. Week 15, 12 for 48. He then misses 2 weeks. They get a bye week. He has a month off. Oh, he looks like Todd Gurley again, that first playoff game. 16 for a buck 15. And then what did he do? The time we sounded the alarm bells, that conference championship game against New Orleans, 4 carries for 10 yards, mm-hmm. And your guy Butterball, C.J. Anderson, is just cutting through the defense.
Yeah, he likes to be called Butterbean.
Oh, Butterbean. My apologies. 10 carries for 35 in the Super Bowl?
Yes.
And then you spend a premium draft pick on Daryl Henderson, who, by the way, at Memphis, I know it's smaller school, smaller conference, 1,900 yards, 9 yards per carry,
yes.
2,200 yards total, 25 touchdowns.
Well, you're getting someone.
A guy that you think can actually – is not just going to be, oh, we're going to use him in special lead packages. No, you're going to use him a lot. And so I do circle back to the money because this doesn't just impact the Rams' ability to be efficient against their cap. This affects every running back in the league that's waiting to get paid. Finally, running backs thought they had broken through. Todd Gurley got paid early. We had a run on multiple drafts in a row where a running back goes in the top 10. Zeke, Saquon, Gurley. Zeke looks like a star. Saquon looks like a star. Gurley, the oldest of them, looked like a star after one down year and got paid. And now what? What is being proven out, at least in this minuscule sample, is the teams that say running back is a fungible position, and even if we have a great one, we are not going to pay him because the shelf life is so short.
Mm-hmm.
If Todd Gurley can't be your bell cow, well, then nobody can for long term. Then all of a sudden, you don't think that this news is landing on the Cowboys' desk? Just like, forget the off-the-field stuff with Zeke. The saying, man, no matter how great he is early, maybe Emmitt Smith doesn't exist anymore. Maybe the guy that's going to give you 1,200 yards for a decade straight just doesn't exist anymore.
And I think that echo went through NFL teams this offseason. Le'Veon Bell didn't have a bunch of people getting ready to pay him, make him the highest paid running back. Like, that negotiation that he had was far tougher than he thought after sitting out with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the message is getting around there.
Well, how much worse off are the Rams if they do have to go to a two-back formation than obviously using either Darrell Henderson or someone else they have or trying to squeeze in Todd Gurley?
Well, this is the thing, Jenna. If you don't have a featured running back, it's either one or two things. Either you don't have a guy that's good enough, or you have a system that you're just going to always use two or three running backs. When you have Todd Gurley on your team, the Todd Gurley that I know, you realize that you have one of the best three-down backs. You have a guy that has blazing breakaway speed that really puts fear into the defense. If he doesn't have that speed, if he doesn't have that durability, then I have to change my offense. That's why there's going to be a lot of pressure on Sean McVay, what he decides to do moving forward. I believe that the Rams, the run draft pick, the third-round pick from Memphis, he's a legitimate NFL player. A lot like Alvin Kamara when they drafted him behind Mark Ingram. Oh, is Mark Ingram playing for the Saints anymore? No. Because the mayor has taken over. Yep. He's had a couple good years, and that's the way this goes in the NFL. So this, to me, is Todd Gurley's most important season.
But it also speaks the fact that that running back was available in the third round. He's first-team All-American. He led the all of college football in yards per touch, and he's available in the third round because people think running back is a position you can find a guy. They hesitate to spend high draft picks on him, and this is only going to lead to that more. When you ask what it does to the Rams, what was the signature game of the NFL regular season? 54-51, supposed to be in Mexico City between the Rams and the Chiefs. There was a player on each of those teams. Yeah, people love the coaches, and everyone loves Mahomes. Some people love Goff. You've got Sammy Watkins, you have Brandon Cooks. There's a player on each team that makes those teams special. For the Rams, it was Todd Gurley. For the Chiefs, it was Tyreek Hill. For two very different reasons, both teams have to be thinking long-term. Can these guys not be in our long-term plans anymore at that level? And what does that do to the two most dynamic offenses in football? I hope Todd Gurley gets back to being Todd Gurley, but it seems like the Rams are coming to the realization that that probably is not going to happen. And it seemed like just that long since he was maybe going to win league MVP.
If he's not 100% too, Jenna, I don't believe they have a chance to be a top five offense. I don't believe they're a Super Bowl contender if they're not a top five offense. So a lot of that depends on Todd Gurley and his overall health.
All right, moving on. According to reports, Kawhi Leonard is being slowed down by a knee issue, which stems from him overcompensating for a quad injury. The same right quad injury that forced him to miss all but 9 games last year in San Antonio. So, CeCe, even though he's not 100% healthy, does Toronto need maybe more from Kawhi moving forward?
Well, be more efficient at what he's doing. He's not going to be healthier. I think that's one of the disappointing things about Kawhi in his camp. They thought after they closed out Milwaukee, he'd have a few extra days of rest and he'd be healthier coming into this finals than he's been the last couple weeks. He hadn't been. He's been hampered. The knee is more of an issue than the right quad. And even though it is the same quad that he had an issue with in San Antonio, it's not the same injury. I did get a clarification from his his team on that last week.
Well, and you mentioned last week before the finals that Kawhi had been dealing with some tendonitis. That was the main thing that was hampering him in these playoffs, and that they hoped he would be healthy going into the NBA finals. As you can see in these highlights, by the way, the injury is not hurting his power. Watch him just bully Klay Thompson there. Okay, you can just go fall down.
Yes.
I think he broke Kevon Looney's collarbone.
Oh, yeah, Kevon Looney ran into him and
broke his collarbone. Now not going to play again. Where it's hurting Kawhi is on his jump shot. He's shooting 28% from three over his last 11 games after shooting 50% from three in the first nine games of the playoffs. That the efficiency is where these injuries are slowing him down.
All right, finally, with all the injury talk surrounding Golden State, Steph Curry has quietly led this team through the start of this series. As the Warriors head back to Oracle for Game 3, Steph is the heavy betting favorite to win MVP, with Kawhi and Draymond having the next best odds. Nick, has Curry been the most valuable player through two games?
It's very close. I feel like through two games, Draymond was the most valuable player in their win. Steph was the best player in game one, but they lost. So how do you associate value with a game they lost, right? So he was Draymond had triple-double in the game they lost, but it was a pretty hollow triple-double. And if you watch it, he didn't have the impact he typically has on both ends of the court. I also think that for Steph, game two, the game they won, man, I know we're going to talk about Iggy. We've talked about Iggy and his helping Steph's legacy and things like that. The idea that how results-oriented we are in these discussions. Steph, in the fourth quarter of their win, his zeros across the board, didn't even attempt a shot, and had just a bonehead technical foul. A technical foul that is indefensible for any player, much less a player that has to know better. A player who's been kicked out of a finals game before for throwing his mouthpiece and hitting a fan. Like, that. So because they won, we don't really care that Steph had zeros across the board and zeroed field goal attempts, which seems incomprehensible, in the fourth quarter of game two. To me, if it ended today, if it's like, hey, pick your MVP, I would pick Draymond. I think Draymond has been the most consistent Warrior, and I think Draymond in game two was the most valuable Warrior. Go ahead.
There's just something funny to the fact that Steph would play in an NBA Finals and Iggy would win an MVP and Dre would win an MVP and one of the greatest shooters to ever play the game wouldn't win an MVP in the Finals if that were the case. But I guess he's got to do more.
I mean, there's tremendous irony to it. Right now, to me, Draymond has had a bigger impact because what he's done on the defensive end. You just talked about it. Kawhi. Part of the reason why are the bodies and everything that they're throwing. And we need to be able to give them some type of credit for that. When Steph didn't win it in their first final, Iggy, you're not giving it to Iggy because he's scoring the basketball. You're giving it to him because on both ends of the court, you felt like he was the best player. It's really hard after two games, especially when there's no advantage. If the Warriors were up 2-0, then we could make a case for, oh, man, this guy. Listen, this is wide open. But the reason why the percentages are higher for Steph is because he's the only offensive player that they have.
Right.
Klay is hurt. They know that. That's baked in there. So Klay might not play game three, so that eliminates him. Kevin Durant's already going to miss three games. That eliminates him. Who else is available? They can't give it to Steve Kerr.
And so that is, there is an element of, for these odds, it's not just what they've done, but a prognostication on what they will do moving forward. By the way, it's 1-1 because of the order. You talk about this all the time. What if the games were flipped? What if Golden State won game one and Toronto won game two? Then would we be saying Kawhi should be the favorite right now? Because Kawhi, even though he hasn't been efficient, he's still averaging 29 points per game in this series. He has still matched Steph's offense while bringing to the table better defense. What's unfortunate for Steph is this is none of this is a legacy discussion. If he had just won the finals MVP, he probably should have in 2015. And I think the audience needs a reminder because it wasn't well reported on in the moment. It's only been well reported on the years since. What happened in that 2015 finals? The year he won league MVP, averaged more points per game in the finals than the regular season and didn't win it. 11 ballots are cast for finals MVP. They come in. It was 4 for LeBron, 4 for Iggy, 3 for Steph. And they can't have a co-finals MVP.
And the NBA, a number of years ago, way again, they said they're not going to have a loser be named MVP.
And that's not a rule, but it's essentially become a rule. Because if it was ever going to happen, LeBron averaged 36, 13, and 9 that year.
Yeah, shooting what from the field?
Well, that year, he shot 58% the year before in the finals. That year, he had a lower percentage because he was the offense unto himself. But he was 36, 13, 9. So it was 4-4-3. And so what's been reported is that the seven people that voted for Warriors came together and said, guys, we can't have co-MVPs. Right. We all obviously think it should go to someone on the winning team. Who's it going to go to? Right. And since Iggy had a 4-3 vote edge, they said, okay, we'll all vote for Iggy. So in the final balloting.
I didn't know that.
Right. So the final balloting shows Iggy 7, LeBron 4, Steph 0. But the real balloting was 4-4-3. So if one person on that initial ballot, if you will, had gone Steph instead of Iggy or had gone Steph instead of LeBron, then Steph has that first finals MVP, mm-hmm. and this is all moot. I still think Steph is I think the best bet is Steph to win it. Even though Draymond, I said, has been the most valuable, I think if it's close at all, Steph is going to get, I don't want to say sympathy, that sounds condescending, but Steph's going to get the Lifetime Achievement MVP award vote, which I think is totally understandable.
But also, Clay, we're not sure about yet. We don't know what's going on with KD. Mm-hmm. There's so much more game left in this series. Anything can happen. We're only two games in, but it just feels like so many moving parts. So this is
whoever has the best game number three, obviously they're going to have an advantage in the series. But between Kawhi and Draymond, whoever has a better game and their team wins, they're going to be the front runner.
All right, let's talk more about those Warriors. And a name not synonymous with injuries in recent years, but Klay Thompson is questionable for Wednesday's Game 3 with a strained hamstring. Kevon Looney is likely done for the series and therefore the season with a chest fracture. Still no word on KD status. And Game 3 is tomorrow. So, CeCe, let's focus on Klay. How would his absence change Golden State's offense?
Oh, it's going to change their offense. I'm just going to start. Let me start on the defensive end first because I believe it's very important.
Okay.
Steph Curry is going to have to spend more minutes guarding their primary ball handler or scorer from the outside. And that might be Van Vliet. It might be Kyle Lowry, whoever gets hot, because you can't depend on Quinn Cook to be able to guard anyone. He's a knockdown shooter. So now let's go on the offensive end. I believe Quinn Cook should be the starter. They're going to run a two-guard offense, him and Steph. I believe Quinn Cook will play a little more off the ball, and you cannot allow him any type of space. You have to force him off the three-point line, force him into the lane, make him a playmaker passing the ball, not a knockdown shooter. I believe it will affect their offense. I believe they will attack both the guards. I believe that you'll have more post-up situations from the guards with the Warriors because they can't be an elite defense when they have inferior guard play on the defensive end from Steph and from Cook. I believe Steve Kerr, they move the ball more. When they get injuries, what they do is get everyone involved more to try to make the court open up, try to get some easy looks, try to get some back door because they know they need someone else to be able to score between 14 to 22 points. Those points that Klay, they're not going to be able to replace him from a style standpoint, but we need to be able to replace those buckets some kind of way. Let's get out in transition before they get their defense set. I expect Steve Kerr to do a number of those things to try to get the win in game number three.
So one thing that I've, in over a few years, learned to listen to you very closely on is injuries and how it affects the athlete. And what you've talked on and off the air about Klay's injury is even if he forces his way in the lineup, even if he can play, he's not going to be the guy that we're used to running baseline to baseline.
No, we can't expect that.
And so here is what I think for the Warriors, that even if he can't be that guy, him being on the court is incredibly valuable for them. Because even if he can't run around, mm-hmm. even if they just say spot up, he's still going to be able to shoot. Klay be able to shoot from a wheelchair. So just him being on the court will open things up more. Him being on the court will make it to where you can't play that box and one. Not that they were necessarily going to unveil that again for game three. I think him being out there in any capacity is the only real chance they have against Toronto in game three, assuming Durant doesn't play. Since Durant's gotten there, they've played eight games, without Klay and KD in the lineup. They've actually won three of them. The three teams they beat were Phoenix, one of the worst teams in the league, Atlanta, one of the worst teams in the league, and then New Orleans this year, post-Anthony Davis trade fiasco.
Oh,
and so they do have three wins, but against some of the worst competition in the league. And what all three of those teams had in common was some of the worst defenses in the league. How you're going to crack the number one playoff defense in Toronto if it's Steph and friends, unless all of a sudden, again, maybe Iggy's going to go game six against the Rockets and just get open threes and knock them down. That is a game where Draymond would have to be game seven of the finals, Draymond, hitting threes, damn near triple-double. Forget 20-plus points. He had 32 in that game. The Warriors beat you with their offense. Their defense has been underrated over the last few years. Their offense has been record-setting. If it's down to just Steph, they become incredibly guardable. So how do I think it impacts the game? I don't think they can win if Klay Thompson doesn't play. If he plays and isn't effective, I think they have a chance just because it opens the rest of the offense up because you have to respect him so much.
If I'm Golden State, I'm putting a lot of emphasis on game number four. Because I'm trying to make this a mini series. Even though I don't have home court advantage, if I don't have Klay available for game three, I have to concentrate and try to get him and KD available for game four. And then now it's the defending, two-time defending champ trying to win two out of three. Okay. Now, who wouldn't take that chance? If you look at all their injuries, starting center, out, best scorer, KD, out. Now Klay might miss some time. For them to say, if they can say after game four, wow, guys, we've made this a mini series, I believe it's a huge advantage. Something else to watch from Toronto's side. Watch OG Anunoby. Watch if he comes back. He was activated for game number two.
Didn't play.
Has rejoined the team and practicing. Hadn't played since April. Watch if he joins the team, because Klay going out and then maybe the Raptors getting another defensive help, I believe they can force Golden State to play their type of tempo in games number three and four.
And then quickly, with Looney out, that's going to put more pressure on Boogie.
Boogie in particular. Boogie showed he could play those 28 minutes.
Yes.
They're going to ask him to do that again. One small note, you mentioned if you're the three-time defending or the two-time defending champs, you'd love to have a best of three to go for a three-peat. I don't necessarily disagree with you. I'll tell you this much, though. Masai Ujiri in Toronto, you tell him beginning of the year to win a championship, you got to win two out of three, and you have home court. They would have signed up for that in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
So that could be a scenario. The Warriors' injuries, the Raptors' history, both teams would say, okay, two out of three. The Warriors trust their championship pedigree. Toronto trusts their home court.
And if you told them it's two out of three with maybe no KD and a hampered Klay Thompson,
absolutely,
they definitely would have taken that.
All
right, take a break. Coming up, is Kawhi coming up short in the finals? That is ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, NBA champ Antoine Walker joins the show. Good morning, Antoine.
Good morning, Jim.
Welcome back, man.
Yes, sir.
Things are heating up in the NBA, unlike what's happening in the studio this morning. Chile.
Jana's on a Cal Ripken streak of complaining about the temperature in the TV studio. Newsflash, America, TV studios are cold.
Wondering how that could get fixed. Let's talk some Andre Iguodala. He had the clutch, risky, improbable three-point shot to seal game two for the Warriors Sunday night, evening up the series with Toronto at 1-1. Iggy has been a key cog in all three of the Warriors championships, quietly working through aches and pains and age. He addressed his motivation to win a fourth title after game two.
Everything you guys have overcome, all the championships you've won, what motivates you to keep going to play hurt at this point in your career?
I like Steph. He's a good dude and good guy to be around. That's really the only reason why I like playing basketball. That's the only reason why I play.
Did that run? You want him to win? Like that's what it is?
Yeah, they I've never seen him in person. Like, so such a good person to ever get some backlash or whatever from his peers, because they're so jealous of what he has. So he's kind of sticking to him. And so I'm trying to whatever it takes to protect his legacy. I'm all for it.
All right, Antoine, what do you make of Iggy playing for Steph? Although it kind of felt like he came up with an answer and then was like, yeah, that's the answer.
Well, it seemed like he was joking at first, and then I started, and then it kind of seemed like he was serious. I know Andre really well. I've worked out with him plenty of times in Chicago. I don't believe that's true, all 100%, but I believe it's, you get around a guy and you can like him. I know him and Steph probably play golf together. Andre's a big golfer, despite spending a lot of time off the court together. Both of those guys are married. They have kids. So all those things can play a part in what goes on.
Age?
I wouldn't even say age.
No, I'm just saying having guys around the same age where you do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, without question.
Because when you went to the family, I just said, yeah, they've been in the league. You know,
been in the league a long time. Both married with kids. They're not out of the clubs at night yet.
Yeah, but I also believe too. You know, Andre Iguodala's been exaggerating a little bit. You got $33 million left on the table. You plan for that. You got to make sure you get that. And then also, I think he's a competitor. I mean, I know Andre's a competitor. He's got the opportunity to be a part of a special team. He's been a huge part of what they've done. They went out their way. Kevin Durant took a pay cut for him to come back. Mm-hmm. But you know, hope we're taking the comment and we can take any way we want to because you can now KD out of it. You didn't talk about KD, about Clay, about playing with Draymond. I mean, you're playing with other all-stars with big egos, so that could have been taken out of content. But they won the game and everything. But I hope he's not playing for Steph's legacy. Steph's legacy is already taken care of. He don't need nobody to play for his legacy. I think Steph has done a great job of that, and he's only going to get better and better. So I hope he's not doing that.
I think that Steph Curry, and I've been knowing Steph since he was a kid. My brother was a head coach Toronto. His dad was on the team. I went to camp with his dad, five-star basketball camp in the 80s. So I've been knowing his dad since he was in high school and I was in high school. So, Steph, it's an amazing story. They do have a great family. It's a lot like Peyton Manning and the men. They are Peyton Manning family, Archie.
Eli
they are
Archie.
Royalty in the NFL and in the NBA right now. There's a couple families that are royalty, and Steph Curry and that family, they are. I can understand that. He is a great guy. I play with a lot of great guys. But let me just tell you, when I get up in the morning and I got to sacrifice my body and what I'm eating and type of training and weightlifting, I'm not thinking about one of my teammates. I mean, Jake Reed and I, man, we broke the NFL record. 1,000-yard season, Jake's my guy. Jake fired his agent, hired my agent, got Jake paid. Jake's family's taken care of for the rest of his life, a lot because of me. But let me tell you something. When I was going across the middle, I wasn't thinking about him. I was thinking about myself. Things in sports happen too fast and in real time. And I'm just going to tell you, money's not a big enough motivator to get you up. You can't tell me I'm playing for someone else's legacy. That's what makes me focus. No, that's impossible. So I can understand, and I can understand being a good teammate, and I can understand saying things sometimes so players hear it, also the owners hear it, because there's a few staples to this team. That's Steph Curry and Iggy. People talk about Clay leaving. People talk about Draymond leaving. People talk about KD leaving. No one ever talks about. So why would I open that up and be like, you know, yeah, I love that guy. I'm going to protect that guy. I got his back. Yeah, there has been that in the NBA for a long time. But you can't tell me you're motivated. You're married. You got a couple kids. But this is my motivation. I just call a little bull on that.
Okay, so two quick points. One, when he says, I'm playing for his legacy, whether we take that to be literal or not, what we can all agree on is how Iggy plays, how everyone plays, has to do with the narrative surrounding everyone else. And by that, I mean Iggy took that shot, and he made it. If he missed it, and the Raptors rush up the court and hit a three. You know what that narrative is?
Steph Curry got that technical.
Steph
got
that extra
1 point.
Steph was 0-for-0 from the field in the fourth quarter with 0 points. He was in the first quarter, didn't make a basket. In the fourth quarter, didn't even attempt a shot. Mm-hmm. And, oh, is this another NBA Finals? Where Steph, so of course, how Iggy plays affects Steph's legacy fairly or otherwise. But take the legacy part out of it. What I found most interesting about the comment was the second part, where he said, I've never seen a guy as disrespected by his peers. And that, I think Iggy is 100% correct on. How many guards throughout the regular season do we talk about when they're matching up with Steph that do not have his credentials, that are clearly not as good as him, that we say, oh, they believe Russ believes he's better. Chris Paul's believed he's better. Dame believes he's as good. Yeah. There is an element of Steph because of his style, because of his size, and I would argue because his dad was in the NBA and he didn't grow up tough the way so many NBA guys mm-hmm. did. There is an element of jealousy, resentment, and, man, he's not better than me, even though he is. Even though he's a more effective player, Steph deals with that Durant doesn't deal with, LeBron doesn't deal with. Hell, Harden doesn't even deal with. I think that's what Iggy's talking about.
I'll get a little pushback on you and disagree with you.
Yeah,
I've been watching this game a long time, and disrespect about the game has always been a part of it. My guy, Isaiah Thomas, you know what he said about Larry Bird? Oh, that dude wouldn't get credit if he was black. So you're talking about disrespect. Like, now, Isaiah said he didn't mean it that way, but it's well documented. It was said. Isaiah eventually ended up apologizing. So Larry Bird, one of the best players we've ever seen, he got disrespected, even from the beginning. Bill Russell, they didn't respect it. There's not enough teams. He's playing with the Celtics. Wilt Chamberlain, they didn't respect him. Kareem, didn't respect him. MJ, oh, he had to quit. Oh, didn't respect him. LeBron recently. That's part of it. So you taking it personal, thinking, oh, it's only happening to my guy. Wake up, man. Look at NBA history. This is a big part of the NBA.
And I think you got to look at it like this. If I'm Andre Iguodala, even with Steph, other players, the Westbrooks, the Damon Lillards, Kyrie Irving, those guys don't believe that Steph Curry is a great defensive player. I think that's what it really comes down to. Like, oh, they feel like, oh, he can't guard me, so I'm better than him. But not knowing what Steph actually brings to the game. He's arguably going to go down as probably one of the top five best point guards to ever play the game. And it's changed the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, we never thought that style of play would win a championship where you can shoot 10, 12, 13, 14 threes and win an NBA championship. He changed that. He's one of the best tough shot makers that we got in the league. He makes tough shots. So he has his offensive game is different than theirs. He does it a different way than they do it. And some guards in his league, Chris Pauls, the Westbrooks, they play both ends of the floor. And let's be honest, Steph is not a guy that's a defensive player. They hide him very well. Klay Thompson takes the responsibility of guarding most point guards, and they hide Steph on the defensive end. So I know what players' egos come in at. They like, well, he can't guard me. I can score with him.
I think that is absolutely there. And the other element where Iggy says he gets disrespected, that's differently than the guys you listed. And this isn't speculation. I know this. Top guy that would be on everybody's MVP ballot year after year, the feeling is, why does Steph get to be the underdog? Why is he discussed as the underdog when, of all the guys in the league, of all the great players, he's the guy who came from the infrastructure to help him succeed more than almost any of us? There is similar, Grant Hill dealt with this to a degree as well, which is the NBA is not a league of a bunch of guys that were rich kids. And the fact that Steph and Clay, the two of them combined, the Warriors are were initially the lovable underdogs. And these two kids, both their dads played in the league. Both them came up rich. Both them came up in situations different than almost all the other top players. There is a level of resentment that is real from other guys in the league. And I think Iggy knows that. And I think that's one of the things he's tapping into.
I get the disrespect. I could do your job easily, but I sit here every day.
I left out Steve Nash, too. Forgot. Oh, yeah.
Here with Antoine Walker, we're talking Kawhi Leonard. According to reports, the Raptors all-everything superstar is being slowed down by a knee issue, which stems from him overcompensating for a quad injury, the same right quad injury that forced him to miss all but 9 games last year in San Antonio. This Raptors team, we know this, it begins and it ends with Kawhi. So, Antoine, I ask you, even though he's not 100% healthy, does this Raptors team need more from him moving forward?
I don't think they need more from him. I think they need him to play smarter. And what I mean by that, he has to take a page out of Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James' book, where you got to get your teammates involved early, and he has to pick his spots. He has to go back to the game one mentality. I don't mind if he gets 14 shots. As long as he's passing the ball, being a willing passer, making other guys try to score the basketball. We know he's capable of getting his own shot when he wants to, even though he's hobbled a little bit, because he got to the free throw line 16 times. So he can still do that, but he has to force these other guys to be aggressive. He needs some scoring. He needs Kyle Lowry to step up, averaging 10 points, shooting 30%, and obviously right now in the finals. He also needs Marcus Gasol to be consistent and to be aggressive. And then the missing link, and for some reason, we're not talking about him enough. Serge Ibaka has to come to play.
Yes.
You know, he's another guy that's been there. He's played in meaningful playoff games. He understands the moment. They need him to step up and play well.
He can give Boogie and give Draymond some problems with his length and ability to be able to play defense, but he just be consistent?
But I like what Kawhi's at offensively. Obviously, you would like to shoot a better field goal percentage, but he's getting to the free throw line. I think he just has to pick his spots. If the game is going smooth and, you know, it's a 2-4-point game, he doesn't have to force it, take on the double teams. He can still be a willing passer, make sure guys get shots and keep them involved, and get himself prepared for the fourth quarter where he can take over a game. I think, you know, game two, he had to force it because they struggled so much to score the basketball in that second half, so he forced it a lot. But he still can be a willing passer and still be able to get his shots, so especially if Klay ends up not playing.
With all the shooters that we have in the NBA, very seldom do we ever see teams double team, especially perimeter players, and force the ball out of hand. All these players, KD struggled a little bit with it. He's 7 foot, so he can pass over it. Steph struggles all the time. Kawhi has struggled with it. From a basketball standpoint, with Kawhi getting double teamed, give me something else that he can do where he can be more aggressive. Because, man, it seems like he's backing away from the double team. Do you think he should be doing something else?
I think he should take the ball out of his hands and post up.
Okay.
And really try to post up to about the 15-foot area where he's got a shorter. He can get to the basket, open up, shoot his 15-foot jump shot. We haven't seen him do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. His fadeaway. He's got a great mid-range game. Get to your mid-range game, especially if you hobbled a little bit. It's going to be very difficult for him because he doesn't go fast to split the double team. They do a good job of corralling, especially when it's Draymond Green, and he's got great hands. So he's got to do more posting up. And this is the thing. Nick Nurse is supposed to be the offensive guru. That's what they hired him for. Mm-hmm. He has to figure that out because you're putting a lot of pressure on Kawhi to ask him to bring it up. Walk it up 94 feet and then try to make a play.
And I would argue Kawhi needs, on Nick Nurse's side of it, get him some easy buckets out of a timeout. Like, how many times in these finals, I know it's only been two games, but does Kawhi have, has he cut back door and just got an easy layup or a dunk? Like, there's...
Well, when you get into the playoffs, Nick, we know all the sets. Right. You can't come up with no new play we don't know. Help side defense is so much better. So many guys are far more engaged in the defense. That's why the struggle in the playoffs becomes real, because the other team is far more familiar with you than any other time during the season.
But the only easy looks Kawhi's getting is from the free throw line.
Yep.
And fortunately, he has been spectacular from the line. He was 10 of 12 in the first game. He was 16 of 16 in the second game. So he's 26 of 28 from the line because he only made 13 shots in this series. He's only shooting 38% in this series. This is where it gets harder for everybody. And the Warriors have done a spectacular job of making life hard on the other team's best option. Like, maybe some of that James Harden slander everyone was engaging in after round two. After we see what happened to Damian Lillard, let's see what happens in these finals to Kawhi Leonard. We might realize, hey, the Warriors, their coaching staff, their players, the experience, Iggy and Draymond and Klay and that length, they can make life hard on the great players in this league.
Don't you think game three could be a good opportunity to get the rest of the Raptors involved? Mm-hmm. You knew that the Warriors are going to be shorthanded, most likely. This could be a good time to get the guys that weren't shooting well, give them a little confidence, maybe take a couple minutes for Kawhi where he'd be desperately out there. Because you know this is going to be the only, not break, but game where they're not going to be at full strength.
It becomes very, very important, especially that they're backcourt. You talked about putting Kawhi off the ball. If I'm Nick Nurse, I'm not having Kawhi bring the ball up anymore. Mm-hmm. Kawhi is a great one-on-one player, but they're not. The Warriors are not going to let you play one-on-one basketball, i.e. Houston, James Harden, the point guard, take the ball out of his hand, all right, i.e. Portland. Take the ball out of Damian Lillard's hand, 4-0 sweep. Kawhi is not a point guard, but because Kyle Lowry is struggling, like, we need to bring him up. Part of his struggle has really led to Kawhi being able to struggle, because Kyle Lowry should be playing 40 minutes a game. He should be scoring about 18 to 20 points a game. He's not doing those things, making a lot of stupid fouls. So if he's able to bring the ball up, him and Van Vliet, if they're able to bring the ball up, Kawhi can get his mid-range. He can start on the baseline. But if they don't play well, Kawhi Leonard's play will be affected, because he shouldn't have to bring the ball up the court at 6'7", because they are not going to let you play one-on-one basketball. And you have to give a lot of credit to the Golden State Warriors. Since the playoffs, they're playing the elite defense that had them in the finals. All right, and this is the worst defensive team that they've had in 5 years. But in the playoffs, they're playing the type of defense that win you a championship.
And I'll add to that, the formula to win was game one. If you really think of five guys in double figures, they move the ball. I thought Kawhi made great plays late, even though he didn't have a great offensive game. But he made some plays late in that game. And then also, you got to figure out, how can I get these other guys open shots? Because they can't get their own shot. Danny Green can't get his own shot. No. That's where you got to count on Kyle Lowry, who's supposed to be your starting point guard. Maybe put him in the pick and roll, and you create him trying to get those guys a shot. So this got to mix up the offense and putting too much pressure on a guy we don't know. They're saying he's hurt a little bit on Kawhi Leonard to do so much on the offensive end.
And listen, the Warriors, or the Raptors, need, in order to beat the two-time defending champs, they need their second, third, fourth, and fifth best players, at least three of those guys in each game, to have a good game, any game they're going to win. But the biggest reason some people were picking the Raptors in this series, I think the biggest reason you guys picked the Raptors in this series, was Kawhi Leonard was coming off
back-to-back masterpieces. In seven games against Philly and six games against Milwaukee. Against Philly, 35-10-4 and over 50% and great defense. Against Milwaukee, 30-10-4 with elite. Best since I've seen since Scottie Pippen perimeter defense. In the finals thus far, it's 29-10-4, 38%, and the defensive impact, because there isn't a Giannis to take out of the game, hasn't been felt as much. If the Raptors are going to win this series, barring more Warriors just falling victim to injury.
There aren't that many left.
Right. They need Kawhi, who has a chance to steal the mantle as the best player alive, to play like it over these next five games. Like, that is the Raptors' clearest path. We know he can do it because we saw him do it in the previous two rounds. He needs to do it in the NBA Finals.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.